Gather up the pots and the old tin cans, the mash, the corn, the barley and the bran. Run like the devil from the excise man. Keep the smoke from rising, Barney. Keep your eyes well peeled today. The excise men are on the... Well, we all know that song. And the mountain tay the excise men were looking for in the hills of Connemara was, of course, poitrine. It's been long associated with illegality, first outlawed way back in 1661. It was only relatively recently, in 1997, that the Revenue Commissioners permitted the licensed sale of poitrine within Ireland. So I wondered about poitrine making today. Well, as part of her Made in Ireland series, Ella McSweeney has gathered poitrine stories past and present.
A hard thing, I'm telling you.
I'd say the present might be hard to find.
It was incredibly difficult. Nobody would talk to me, Pat.
No, well, no one's going to admit to it. And yet in various parts of the country, you know, you can go to someone, do you know someone who's making it and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I need it for the Christmas pudding, or I need it for a rub on my back, or I need
the
it for all sorts of...
The greyhounds are sick, yeah.
Yeah, so it certainly is still going on.
Very much
and
so.
We often hear of raids where barrels and barrels of the stuff are thrown down the
It's hidden
ditch.
Ireland, isn't it?
It's I mean, it's,
and
Ireland.
I know there was a lovely article in The Independent on Saturday about poitrine, and I think the journalist was down in Cork and said that the art of it is going, but certainly where I was in Connemara, it is buzzing and alive with poitrine, I tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, any of us who've ever been offered a bottle of it, I mean...
Have you been offered a bottle?
I have, in the past, many times over the years. And you're wondering, like, what is in it? Will it make me go blind?
I know, you have to be very careful, yeah.
There are concerns. Now, brewing kind of brings things together and creates beer. By definition, distillation is different.
It is, I mean, and it's what poitrine is all about, which is the... based on the principle that alcohol boils at a lower temperature than water, and it's a way then for to capture the alcohol. I mean, poitrine is in many ways just pure. It's not 100% pure alcohol, as we know, but it is a way to get the alcohol. And the art of distillation isn't as old as the art of brewing, which is, as you say, getting things together. But I was reading, actually, you know, back in, you know, the Middle East around the 8th century, there was a poet called Abu Nuwas, and he described a wine that was the result of distillation. And he said, it has the colour of rainwater, but is as hot inside the ribs as burning firebrands.
Sounds familiar.
Which sounds very familiar. I tasted poitrine a few days ago and it exactly captures that that sentence.
Okay, but in terms of making it, I mean, to get the wash that eventually is distilled so that the alcohol rises being heated and therefore turning into its own vapour at a lower temperature and then being trapped
and rolled
off. You
keep doing that to get it more and more pure.
Yeah. What goes into the actual basic mix?
I mean, as we'll hear in the clips I've recorded, any old sugar is what is needed for the yeast to work and make alcohol. So we always associate poitrine with potato and potato skins, which is where the worry about blindness can come. But I met an amazing gentleman called Martin McHenry, who's a part-time farmer from Lettermore in Connemara, who very kindly agreed to share his memories of making poitrine with his father 50 years ago. And they used oats and barley, which is what the tradition is over in Connemara. And that was a way to get the source of starch, of sugar.
We used to put 200 weight, bag 100 oats and 100 barley down in a hole of water when the grain was coming out through it. He used to put it into his shed. We used to put a cover underneath it. And every couple of hours we used to roll it around till it get dry again. We had to get a machine, crush it down like... That was the start of the making the poitrine. That time you'd have to go on the mountains to do it because the coppers was splinter. We put it into a barrel then like, and we'd put it in boiling water. We used to screen it out to a bucket and put it in two more barrels. We used to hold them and put gold into them. We call it yeast like, but some of them call gold like.
And where would you get the yeast from?
They used to get it in from Galway. As far as I remember, it was like a pound of butter. I used to remember them cutting it in halves and putting half in both buckets. So they leave that for a day or two. And then they used to put it back in the worm and put a big fire underneath the worm. And the worm was going down to a barrel of cold water.
So it was catching the steam, was it?
It's catching the steam. So when the steam used to go up in and through the worm, by the time it used to come out the other side, it was poitrine.
And when you were testing it with your father, what were you testing it for?
They used to have a little glass there. And if the bubbles used to stay on the side of the glass, it used to be a good poitrine. But if the bubbles wouldn't stay on the side of the glass, you'd have to go back in again. fella was talking to me there last week and he said he bought it in and there was 150 proof on it.
150 proof. Well, was it always made at a particular time of the year?
It tend to coincide with the oat and barley harvest. So Marcin and his father used to make it around October. And then I suppose just obviously then it became something that was, you know, reasonably festive. So they'd always have bottles for Christmas.
And well, I suppose at a time when buying a bottle of whiskey would have been dear enough to get poaching at half the price.
This is what he said. And he said, obviously, that, you know, going to the pub and buying pints was expensive. And that's what his father did. So, you know, it was around this time of year when it would be quite active. I'd say that.
Now, besides drinking it, we mentioned earlier they had multiple uses for poaching.
Multiple. And I'm sure your listeners now will all have poaching stories because everyone has a poaching story that I've asked in the past few days. They'd rub it on greyhounds before a race. That was one story I got. To keep warm, I suppose we can't remember now how cold people were in the 50s. It wasn't easy to get the house heated and all the rest. To get better from a cold, to remove bruises. You know, there's versions of poaching all over the world. The moonshine is what they'd call it. And the illicit distillation, I suppose it's by the light of the moon is how it was done. But everyone had these versions, especially in rural parts of the country. Here's Marcin talking about the uses of poaching when he was young.
If you have arthritis, rubbing into the arthritis, and they reckon the pain used to go away. They weren't talking about they weren't talking about tablets then, like, yeah.
What was it used for?
For the flu now, I remember times when they used to put down a glass of milk, and if you have a hot glass of milk, spoon of sugar, and a half glass of that poaching, I'll tell you, you'll sleep the night and you'll sweat it out. There was a cow down in the hole, like, and when we brought her up, she was shaking like anything. One of the old fellows said, oh, he said, get a half bottle of this poaching, and we got it all right, and they gave it to her. Well, I'll tell you, in an hour's time, that cow was running around the field and there was no problem.
How do you convince a cow to drink half a bottle of poaching?
Well, I suppose the way it was, she was lying back and she didn't complain. She went eating grass after it.
I wonder how she felt the day after. Yeah. A cow with a hangover. It's interesting about curing the cold and all that, because Professor Austin Darragh told me that whiskey is an antiviral. For example, so the reason a hot whiskey works, you can throw in a bit of lemon and cloves and honey and whatever else you want to do.
And it's one of those things we're always told, aren't we?
But the whiskey actually has an antiviral effect, so there you go.
So there's something in it, yeah, and the idea of having a hot whiskey when you're feeling a bit sick is something that people mention.
I remember another piece that the late Spike Milligan used to do where he was reading epitaphs from tombstones, and one of them was, here lies the body of William Black. His wife rubbed whiskey on his back. She rubbed it there to cure his cough, but he broke his neck trying to lick it off. Anyway, you mentioned this is all the illicit, the tradition of the illicit distillation of poaching. But what about the legal business? I mean, how many people are out there legally making poaching?
There are a couple. I think, do we have a clip there of Marcin, clip number 3, where he's talking about how secretive it is? Because I think that what's particularly interesting is how secretive it is today. But in 1806, there was a Townland Fines Act where the government made it that basically communal people would be fined if one person was caught making poaching. So therefore,
the whole community would be fined.
The whole community.
A bit like reprisals, you know, when a Nazi was attacked by the mercenaries or the whatever, the partisans, that's the word I'm looking for.
The partisans.
The whole community would suffer.
The whole community would suffer. And it was an effort, I suppose, to try and crack down in what was essentially the golden age of poaching around the 1800s. So what the Irish did, they made the poaching on the county border. And therefore, if they were caught, they'd throw it over the other county and run away. And that was the solution. But here's Marcin talking about the secretiveness of poaching making.
It was really at night time we used to go out doing it, like, because it was a fire. You know, when you put the fire down with the turf, there's a lot of smoke, like. So the cops shouldn't be out at night, like. We used to go so far back in the mountains anyways. The smoke wouldn't come on the roads. You used to hide it well away from the house, like.
Where would you hide it?
In gullies, inside the road, like. You'll remember it yourself, like, you know.
Was the making of it in October something that the community did or families did together?
Nobody would know anything about it till you have it finished. And when it was finished, then if you want to give a bottle away or something, they used to come and buy a bottle of you, like, you know. It was secret all the time. And even today, up to today. Because the people will be doing it, will be, well, heading away, like, you know.
Heading away, yeah. Martin Fogarty has texted me, listening to you live from Boston, nothing like the spirit of the Irish at Christmas, and no doubt that will be alive and well despite the hard times, and nothing like Poutine to enhance it. But then another one here, only last week I heard that Poutine consumption is causing serious alcoholic problems in at least one small town in the west of Ireland. Not funny at all. You're nodding your head in agreement there.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt. Look, there's no, you know, and I think that I spoke to a few people in the past few days who said there's a rise of it amongst students, which is absolutely tragic, you know. So, I mean, I suppose what we're trying to do here is just reflect the tradition in the past.
Poutine making deprived the state of much needed tax revenues when we were at our poorest. No surprise then that farmers were the primary producers, says Jim, who I presume has an axe to grind. Poutine making was a serious sin in Ireland up to the middle of the 20th century. It could be forgiven by a bishop only.
Is that
I didn't
right?
know that.
Yeah.
When a distiller had poutine ready to sell, he would be found in the queue outside the bishop's confessional.
With the
so
bottle.
You'd know it was
pocket.
Ready. Yeah, I'm sorry for this particular sin, but here's a bottle. Just to prove I sinned. Let's see. My dad, RIP, was a great musician, and he played at many a party in the Garda station with the poutine they had seized when I was a small child. Nought was thought of it then. Yeah. Another one. 30 years ago, while a student in Pierce College, I would buy poutine from the porter. It was 2 pence a bottle, great quality, and it was made in Donegal. Great memories, says Marion. Mm. Anyway, they are legally making poutine where?
Yeah, you can. And the Cooley Distillery, I've got a bottle here in front of you. And there are a couple of commercial brands of poutine, but the Cooley Distillery, which is an independent distillery in Ireland, Alex Chasko, who's an incredible man from Oregon, is the head distiller there. And they decided to do a limited run of 1,000 bottles to sort of revive this tradition. And I went to Kilbeggan to meet him, and he showed me how it all starts.
Liam here is cleaning out our mash tun. So at the end of the day, we have spent grains that are left over from the process. What he's doing right now is he's brushing them out into the bin below us. It's going to become cattle feed.
Nice cattle feed.
Yeah. The process starts with our grain silo in the back here, and that drops down through our mill and then gets brought up through the conveyor system and into our mash tun. Hot water and grain is mixed, 65 degrees Celsius. The starch breaks down into simple sugar.
Because the grain is there just for the sugar. I mean, you could use anything, really.
Yeah, you could use any form of starch. Potatoes, maize, barley, rice. You can go to your store and get a bag of sugar. You just have to pay for somebody else to make it into sugar. Yeah. And then we start draining off the sugar and we transfer it over here to our fermenter.
This is full of very, it's sort of mustardy color liquid.
The yeast is eating the sugar and it's producing carbon dioxide and alcohol. And that gets transferred to the stills. And alcohol boils at a lower temperature than water. And if you have something cold for that vapor to condense on, you can capture the alcohol and drip it off and into a container and capture that. And that's what we do. So we distill our poutine twice, then it's put in a bottle and sold.
Now, Ella, the difference between whisky, which they do in Tyrconnell, and poutine, what is the difference?
The only difference is, I mean, if you take poutine and you put it into an oak barrel and you leave it for 2 or 3 years, you then get whisky and you just water it down a wee bit because whisky isn't as strong as poutine when it comes to alcohol content. So it is the core basic recipe for all the spirits, but it's just a different way of maturing it. Poutine isn't matured.
But in the same way as we traditionally have made poutine illegally, I presume in Russia they're making vodka in the same sort of way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, Alex Chasko told me all the stories of very similar traditions in rural America, in Oregon, where he comes from, of moonshine. There's all these different words in it. I think hooch is another one. So there's all these traditions around, as I said earlier, the rural parts of the country.
Yeah. So if you take poutine and you put it in an oak barrel, you'll have whiskey.
2 years later, yeah. And obviously you then water it down a wee bit because whiskey isn't as strong as poutine, but it's exactly the same.
All right.
It's just matured poutine, basically.
A couple of comments here. I worked with a girl in the Great Southern Hotel in Galway in 1978 who used to put poutine into her Honda 50 and drive in from Inverin. That's Catherine in Swords. James suggests that cows don't have hangovers, they have hangunders. Anyway, you have a bottle of Cooley poutine here,
yeah,
which is a very nice understated label. It looks for all the world like like the label you'd get from a fine chateau in France. It's full of detail and respectability, shall we say.
It's a limited run as well. I mean, I don't know whether it's going to be something that they do forever. But I did get a chance to taste it, to smell it first, because it's quite strong. Brian Quinn in Kilbeggan is a remarkable man. Let me taste it.
It's quite a difficult taste. We have some here beside us.
Yes,
I'm going to try it.
You can have a little taste of that.
Ginger,
that
is, water.
That is roughly about 65%.
It warms you.
It's quite warming.
It's quite an acquired taste, isn't it?
It's an acquired taste.
In the past, was there any tradition in Ireland that you know of where things were added to the poutine itself to give it more flavour?
There's always been things added to the poutine and to the early iscabacha, all sorts of herbs. Different people use different herbs like thyme and mint, and sloes have been used to make slow poutine as opposed to slow gin, and allowed to sit for about 6 weeks, and then you would have quite a nice sweet liqueur.
So, Ella, your reaction to tasting the stuff, what did you think?
I mean, I'm not a big drinker, and I wouldn't. I think I'd find it very difficult to drink it. But, you know, it's something that I suppose has been around for a long time, and it's interesting to see that they're trying to rejuvenate the tradition.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 65% by volume. I don't know how that compares with whiskey, but it's as clear.
Much more,
absolutely clear.
It's like
crystal
water.
Clear.
Yeah, like. Yeah.
All right, Ella, thank you very much. Ella is with me every Monday morning with her Made in Ireland slot. It's an Athena Media production supported by the BAI Sound and Vision Scheme. For more audio and photographs and video, you can go to the Made in Ireland Facebook page or our own website on rte.ie/todaywithpatkenny, where all of Ella's features our podcast. Some more of your comments. Johnny Johnston in Ballinasloe in Galway says, when he was a child, the bottle of poutine and the bottle of Knock holy water got mixed up in his house. He was blessed going to school every morning with the holy water font, with the best of Connemara poutine. Now I know why the phrase sucking diesel is popular with our rural cousins. Poutine is unrefined whiskey. I bet it costs more too. That's from James. Distilling diesel is now a skill from green to white. Gin in India, arak in Iran. Virtually every country has some sort of moonshine of its own, but ours is poutine.